Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leah.
Would you like to introduce our prestigious guest?
Absolutely. I have the greatest pleasure to welcome to our podcast today Alex Gibney, who is perhaps the most famous, well-respected, and acclaimed documentary filmmaker in the world. Yeah. Alex, of course, made the movie about Scientology on HBO called Going Clear, which itself won 3 Emmy Awards, was nominated for 7, and he has done some other amazing documentary films. In fact, Mea Maxima Culpa, his documentary about the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. was something that had a huge impact on me. And when Larry Wright contacted me and said that Alex Gibney was planning on doing a version of his book, would I be interested? I was absolutely all feet in. So, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to hear you and for us to be able to at least see your smiling face.
Hi, Alex Gibney.
Hey, Leah. Hey, Mike. It's great to see you.
Thank you. And yes, and as you mentioned, Mike, Going Clear, I was sitting wondering, what do I tweet to the public that will say, I am with you and I'm with you publicly? And it was when Going Clear came out that I wrote a tweet that confirmed, yes, to the public and to the press that I was indeed out of Scientology and making a public statement. So thank you, Alex, for giving me the out and a way to acknowledge that I was out and on the side of the people of the stories that you were telling. And thank you so much for doing Going Clear. It was honestly a game changer for a lot of us, and we can't thank you enough.
Well, thanks, Leah, and thanks to you and to Mike for continuing that great work that you guys have been doing on A&E and the podcast and everything
else. Thank you.
I know it's very meaningful, particularly to folks who've been in, yeah, and have either come out or are now in the process of coming out. It's hugely meaningful. So, Leah, I remember when I came to see you, you know, right around the time, and you were just thinking about, you know, announcing to the world you were coming out. I think one of the things that was so interesting to me was, because you were just coming out, the degree to which you had imbibed all the language, mm-hmm. of the church was amazing to me, you know, right, because when you were talking about it, I almost felt that I needed a translator. It was so intense.
Yes.
It was really interesting, which shows, you know, how important it is to create that alternative world.
Yes. Yes, because it has its own nomenclature, and it's very hard,
right,
to, you're basically
to
learning to speak English.
The prison of belief.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Amazing. So let's talk about you and your path to making this documentary and Fair Gaming, and the Fair Gaming of you and HBO and Larry Wright. And
what on earth gave you the idea that it would be a good thing to make a documentary about Scientology?
Well, frankly, I've been resisting doing just that for about 10 years. A number of people had come to me and asked me to do it. And I had, both because I knew that there would be some fair gaming, so there was a certain risk involved, but also I felt it was, as opposed to, say, the Catholic Church, the numbers of people in Scientology were relatively much smaller. So it's like, why am I going to put myself through all that agony for this? And honestly, it was Larry's idea. I mean, when I read Larry's book, and I, you know, Larry came to me, we knew each other, and I was resistant even to him. But when I read his book, it gave me the way in. And the whole way in for me was this idea of the prison of belief. Mm-hmm. Because the prison of belief connects the experience of Scientology to all of us.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's the big misconception, and I think it's a broader misconception on all sorts of fronts in the world today. But the idea that there are good people and there are bad people, and the bad people are in cults and the good people are not.
Right.
What you begin to understand is that you know, there but for the grace of something go I, and that is to say that so many intelligent, talented people were drawn into Scientology for sometimes very good reasons initially.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they're good people who think they're doing great things for the world. That's what we all believed.
That's right. Yeah. And even at the beginning, you know, it seems like, oh, it's just an applied philosophy. And, mm-hmm. and by the way, talking these things out to an auditor, it makes me feel so good. And what's wrong with feeling better about myself? And mm-hmm. and so that whole idea of somebody at a key moment in their life. Mm-hmm. Now, some people were born in, but mm-hmm. you know, so other people came to it. You know, mm-hmm. off the street, mm-hmm. to drop in, to feel good about it, and slowly but surely, to sort of evolve into, or maybe to extend Larry's metaphor, to walk into that prison of belief mm-hmm. and ultimately be comfortable sitting there in the cell, even though the door is open, mm-hmm. and to believe that actually it's a good thing for you to stay there and right. never come out.
Right.
And
right.
when you've been in there long enough, mm-hmm. it becomes terribly hard to reckon with the idea that now to leave would mean to admit to yourself that all those years before have been somehow a terrible mistake or have been wasted. And so it was that very human idea. And after all, I grew up, you know, Catholic. I was a good Catholic boy. Mm-hmm. And it made me also reckon with certain aspects of that experience that translated very capably to the mm-hmm. whole Scientology experience. So it was that broadly human aspect of this enterprise that made me really interested in getting involved yeah. in doing a film on it.
And then, Alice, what happens next as you start to dive into the world of Scientology? And because, I mean, you've dealt with some pretty heavy subjects before. You've done The Inventor, you've done We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks, Mea Culpa, as Mike mentioned, Enron, the smartest guys in the room, Client 9, the rise and fall of Elliot Spitzer, Taxi to the Dark Side, for which you won an Oscar, about the war in Iraq, Citizen K, about Vladimir Putin, and Dirty Money, The Looming Tower.
Jesus, so, it's time for me to lighten up.
No. So my point is, you've done important stories. I mean, you do important stories that need to be told.
Well, and I felt this was one of those. And
had you ever prior to this received this kind of treatment of fair game?
Yeah, I mean, when we say this kind of treatment, I would say that the people in the film probably mm-hmm. had it rougher mm-hmm. than I had it, mm-hmm. and I had been, you know, at the other end of a campaign by conservative elements of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And the supporters of WikiLeaks came after me very hard, you know, in a social media campaign. Mm. So I was prepped to some extent, but I wasn't really prepared for the extent of the campaign, the fact that there would be documentaries made about me, the fact that, you know, people would follow me, the fact that, you know, 25 people would suddenly show up at my office demanding to be seen, you know, full page ad in the New York Times. I mean, now nobody deals with newspapers anymore, but at mm-hmm. the time, you know, full page ad in the New York Times and the LA Times, you know, calling mm-hmm. me out. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was impressive, and not a little bit scary, but it was interesting, and it was you know, because we should get around to the other folks who, you know, who probably were more at risk than I was. But Mike, it was something that you told me early on that was hugely helpful to me, and you had said, Alex, they're going to try to get inside your head, and the key thing is not to let them. That is to say, it's inculcating the idea that you are always at risk and always at mm-hmm. you know, under threat, that rattles around in your head. And if you let it consume you, it will consume you. Mm-hmm, so right. understand that's what's going on. And then you can see it from the outside rather than let it rattle around inside your head. And it proved to be a very important moment. I remember I was going to a screening of the film in Hollywood at the Academy Theater that's on Vine Street. And coming out of the dark a parking lot, and suddenly somebody comes right up to me, I mean, very close. He says, hi, my name is Randall Stith. And I have been in the Church of Scientology for 40 years, so now you know why I hate you. Ooh. I said, oh, okay. So at that moment, I you know, prepared. I said, please, could you spell your name?
Right.
And I took it down. Probably I should have, you know, taken out my iPhone and started videotaping. Mm. But when I got inside, and then I learned, he told me that he was making a documentary about me. So far, the documentary hasn't come out. I'd be delighted to see it when it does. But, you know, when I got inside, after the film was over, I saw that, you know, Randall was sitting in the front row staring at me. And I introduced him to the audience. I said, I'd like everybody to meet Randall Stith. And he's from the Church of Scientology and he's making a documentary about me. Mm-hmm. And then I had him stand up. And that kind of diffused things in a way that that was uncomfortable for him and not so much for everybody else. Because I think, getting back to the point I was making earlier, that part of, I mean, there were some very serious physically harmful things that Fair Game can do. And you know, you've had people on, and you'll have other people on who can talk about that. But part of it is this psychological dimension to it, where you feel you're alone, you're under threat, you're looking around all the time. To be able to diffuse that, to bring it out in the open, is I found hugely helpful.
Yes, and the fact that you had your wits about you to do so, I mean, we've had a few things happen, and at every turn, people are fumbling for their phones, they don't think to get their phone, you know, they get scared, and like you said, it takes a psychological toll on you, because then you start thinking, where was this person, what did they see, where, oh my God, you know, are they where my kids are they, and it does, it has a way of permeating your thoughts, and really it's a very scary thing for people who have not dealt with this, and most people have not dealt with this in their life. You have in some capacity, but not to this extent with Scientology. And so what was his role, Mike? Is he a representative of OSA? What is he? Yeah. He's just a Scientologist?
He's one of the special people that is designated by the Office of Special Affairs to perform those sort of functions. If you look him up on IMDb, which you can, he has three credits, which are three films for the Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
A Scientology front
Which, of
front
course,
group.
Is a Scientology front group. That's it. Right. That's all he's ever done. He's no documentary filmmaker. He's just a Scientologist that produces propaganda pieces for the Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
Yes.
But actually, interestingly, Alex, something I had never thought of before, you're mentioning that what I told you about the mind. It suddenly dawned on me that everything around Scientology, talking about the prison of belief, and now talking about the mind games of Fair Game and harassment and intimidation, it's all psychological warfare, psychological control. The whole subject is really that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that Larry focused and then you focused on the prison of belief. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about Fair Game, which for the most part is psychological warfare. I mean, there is some physical aspects to it, but like you just said, it's getting inside your head and making you scared and making you worried about what might happen. And I never really dawned on me that these two things are so closely interconnected.
Well, and for L. Ron Hubbard, who is such an enemy of the whole idea of psychiatry, you know, there are a lot of elements of psychology that play all the time. I mean, I just think he was pissed off that he got nasty letters about some of his therapy. And so he made it his mission to make psychiatry an enemy. But there's so much about, you know, what he does, which is trying to play tricks with your head, trying to play tricks with your mind, that is so much a part of all of this.
Alex, you were talking about the people who appeared in the documentary that was premiered at the 2015 Sundance Film Festival and was released in 2015 on HBO. It was a huge success, most watched doc, right, on HBO at that time.
It's still.
Nominated for 7 Emmys, like Mike said. It received a Peabody Award and won the award for Best Documentary Screenplay from the Writers Guild of America. But it featured people like Mike, right? Mike's been fair gamed. Paul Haggis, he's been fair gamed. Marty Rathbun, he's been fair game, but not so much anymore because he's a turncoat and went back into Scientology. Jason Begay was in it. He was fair game.
He was, yeah.
Spanky Taylor was in it. She was fair game. Tom DeVocht, fair gamed. Hannah Ellington.
Elteringham.
Yes.
Elteringham.
Yeah, she was in it. Fair game. Sarah Goldberg, she was in it. She was fair game. Tony Ortega, of course, in it. Fair gamed. And by the way, to today, Mark Headley in it. Fair gamed. Right? But also, HBO. Let's talk about HBO, the fair gaming of HBO. Scientology tried to block not only the release of the book, right? When it was going to be released.
Well, they
right?
successfully because, blocked the release of the book in certain territories, like the United Kingdom, for example, where libel laws are not favorable to authors. Mm-hmm. But they were never able to block the publication of Larry's book here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was a moment where Larry was writing his first article about Paul Haggis for The New Yorker, mm-hmm. where as part of the fact-checking process, representatives of Scientology showed up with something like 20 banker's boxes full of evidence from the church as to why he was so wrong and so forth.
What was
so
the evidence? I mean, what was
well, the you'll have to. The evidence ended up once the representatives of Scientology left the room. David Remnick turned to Larry Wright, I believe is the way it happened, and said, "Oh, now you bastard, you've got your book." I.e., they had just provided him with all the material that was going to be the material for his book, which is exactly what happened. So you want to know what the evidence is? It's in his book,
right?
Because they gave him chapter and verse of the creation and perpetuation of Scientology.
Right.
So they were, I think, thought that they were fair gaming him, but they they had the tables turned in that particular case.
And then what happened with HBO? What did Scientology do? Am I asking the right questions, Mike? I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so Sheila Nevins was approached at a screening, I believe, in London, and suddenly confronted. I mean, that's their specialty, is confronting you in moments and places where you least expect it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a bit shocking to her. But then what I found more interesting was the volume of legal letters that we began to receive from the church. Now, interestingly enough, HBO, you know, a lot of broadcasters, and indeed, and I went back and checked this before this interview, a lot of broadcasters not only declined to do documentaries about Scientology because they were afraid of the litigiousness of Scientology, because, I mean, you had Rich Behar on, and I believe the Time Magazine lawsuit was one of the most expensive media lawsuits in history.
Mm-hmm.
But they were afraid of that. But even when I was doing Going Clear, when we went to license footage of Scientologists appearing on Anderson Cooper or whatever, they wouldn't license it to us because they were afraid it was going to come back and haunt them. They were going to be, you know, one of the key things about this film was that we didn't go in the front door. Mostly it's a film about people who left the church. Mm-hmm. So we interviewed people like Spanky, like Jason, like Paul. But we had to keep that very secret, even where we conducted those interviews. I would use burner phones to call them. And then I would go to the location, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours before they would arrive. And then they would arrive in a car just going someplace random so that there wouldn't be a kind of an association with the filming of this with their everyday movement. So it was very carefully constructed to try to take the pressure off of the people I was interviewing. But when the film came out, you know, I know Jason told me, you know, he had people follow him back to his apartment in Chicago and so just to let him know that they knew
where
he lived.
Right.
That's right. And Leah, I mean, Spanky was followed down the street, dark at night. by some very big individuals, just letting her know that they were following her. Mm-hmm. It was...
And they're physically intimidating. It's
very physically intimidating. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're a woman walking mm-hmm. alone at mm-hmm. night, mm-hmm. On a shadowy street, and, sure. and two very big people come up behind you and are following you. That's right. a seriously intimidating thing. That's the threat of physical harm in a way that's... that was far more scary for sure. Spanky than anything that happened to me. I mean, they tried to do things to me, but I felt I was forewarned and therefore forearmed by some of what Mike had taught me.
Right.
Alex, I remember when Mark Headley and I arrived in Salt Lake to go to the Sundance Film Festival for the premiere. There was some guy waiting for us with a camera who was he looked like he came, just had stepped out of the Sturgis, motorcycle gang festival. He was 250 pounds with a leather biker jacket. And he was there clearly, obviously waiting for us and let us know that he was there to follow us up to Park City. It was, just the typical Scientology fair game. We are going to be there, present in your face, confronting you and making you think and worry that things might happen that are outside of your control. So, it happened to everybody. I think that everybody on the list that appeared in the film ultimately was in some way or another confronted by Scientology fair game, during and after the release.
Yeah, like you said, Mike, Scientology tried to block the release, right? 10 days before the film was to premiere, they took out full page ads in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times, right? They did a whole smear campaign, a special report, quote unquote, attacking the film. They had an expensive campaign to block it internationally. And this is a quote from Alex Gimmie: every step of the way, every distributor, every festival has received multiple threatening letters from the Church of Scientology. Some have come very close to buckling.
Yeah. It took a lot of convincing to persuade the Sydney Film Festival in Australia, for example, to let us show there, because the Church of Scientology threatened them with ruinous lawsuits if they persevered. But, they were able to go forward. ITV, the partner in the UK, put our original premiere date on hold and delayed for some time, because there's an arcane difference between libel laws in Northern Ireland mm-hmm. And the rest of the United Kingdom. And the church, which had hired a very well-regarded attorney, who mm-hmm. I knew from another film, to threaten the network. Mm-hmm. They were prepared to, ITV was scared enough of that possibility so that mm-hmm. it delayed our broadcast for some time. And insurance was ruinously expensive for us.
Sure.
Because we were insured for our broadcast in the United States, but it mm-hmm. took a policy with Lloyd's of London to be mm-hmm. able to be insured throughout the rest of the world. I mean, it was hugely expensive to be able to prepare for it.
Right.
But I think we were ready. And that made all the difference.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it was everybody else who wasn't ready. For example, Tony Ortega, who does an amazing website and has been exposing Scientology for years, was never a Scientologist, but Scientology, or through Scientology's lawyers, they hired a private investigator. Mike, what was that guy's name?
Saldarayaga.
Yes.
Eric Saldarayaga.
Right. And he hacked, he was...
Me and Tony.
He hacked your computers and he ended up pleading guilty, right, to this federal charge of conspiracy to commit computer hacking on behalf of Scientology. Both you and Tony. Paul Haggis reported that he had spies posing as a reporter for Time. This is Scientology's front magazine that's still going today, and attempted to interview him in a possible attempt to attain material to use against him. And it goes on today, everybody. The campaign against Paul is continuing today. We're going to get to that another time. But, you know, Scientology, they contacted film critics complaining that the reviews of Going Clear were filled with bald-faced lies. And on top of all this, Alex, you would think that, you know, Going Clear, right, you did this in 2000, was released in 2015. You think, okay, you've moved on to different stories. You've made many documentaries after this. But, you know, I follow you on social media, and I'll see a tweet going, hey, if anybody's pretending to be an interviewer for a magazine, pretending to be a friend, like, it's still going on today.
Well, and
they still have their hate website up of you.
It's still costing them money.
Tax exempt money. Don't worry. They have lots to spend,
Alex. Those documentaries are so hilarious. They're almost, I mean, I've enjoyed them. Let me just say.
But Alex, there is another thing that you should recognize and take some comfort in. Your film changed the way the, at least broadcast media, addresses Scientology now.
We would not have had a show if it was not for you.
Exactly. You made it acceptable for people to make films or news pieces or whatever on Scientology. And prior to you, the only people that had really done anything was the St. Petersburg Times, Joe Childs and Tom Tobin in their series of articles in the St. Petersburg Times. And like way before that, Rich Beha, but as we talked to him about, you know, that lawsuit and the actions against Time Magazine had a horrendous chilling effect on the media.
It did.
You and HBO changed that. Like print media was one thing. Coming out on HBO with a straight up, this is the raw, unvarnished truth about Scientology, made a tremendous difference. And you should be very proud of that. And I hope that you are, because
I am proud of it. And I was also hugely proud and grateful to HBO, who backed me up 100%. I mean, they really went to the mat with me and supported the film tremendously, hired the lawyers necessary. You know, I had a bodyguard that went with me to various events, necessary one time, but they understood what they were getting into and they were ready to do it because they thought it was important. And I do know from talking to a number of people who had left the church that they also felt a huge burden off their backs, that they now felt that they were able to talk openly about their experiences of having been in the church and having left it, that it gave them license to come forward in a way that they hadn't done before. So both in the media and I think for that community, which you guys know better than I do, but it seemed like it really did have an impact.
Oh, huge. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Enormous. Do we just want to ask about the one thing? Because the one time you said that it was necessary to have the bodyguard.
Oh, it wasn't super serious, but it was just, you know, walking down a street and suddenly somebody popped out, had a camera, and was clearly a Scientologist and moved very aggressively toward me. That at that point, the bodyguard interposed himself between me and them and asked them just to move on. You know, it was somewhat disquieting. But,
of course. Yes. Yeah. People are just not used to that happening. You know, like, you know, the business that I'm in, you know, we're used to paparazzi, but they're very visible. I mean, they want to take the picture. They want to move on. They don't want to. One time there was somebody in my neighborhood following me and I had cut him off and I actually parked my car in front of his and I got out. And he literally was like, I'm just a paparazzi. I'm not from the Church of Scientology. I'm just a paparazzi. You know, like, and that said a lot to me. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I was about to, I don't know what I was about to do. I'm from Brooklyn, so I don't know actually what I was going to do. But the fact that he was like, he had to say that he wasn't from Scientology to put me at ease. I was like, oh, for the first time, I'm like, thank God. Get a good picture of me. And you can go.
Just something else that you touched upon, Alex, was you said that you had this idea, well, the Catholic Church is huge, but Scientology is sort of a more limited audience and whatever. And Leah mentioned the success of the film when it came out. But I went to the premiere at Sundance, and it was perhaps the most overwhelming experience I have had in my life. I recall sitting in that and the place being so packed, like jam-packed.
No, like they had to turn away hundreds and hundreds of people.
To come to the premiere, and all of these people coming up to us and saying what, how brave you are, and what a wonderful, and how it, what an experience it was, and blah, 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 and the standing ovation and the accolades. And it, that moment right then at that premiere was exactly what you're just talking about. Okay, things have changed. This is now a different world. What Alex and HBO and Larry have done has changed the world for Scientologists, ex-Scientologists, and everybody else. And it was remarkable. I don't have anything to compare it to. I haven't been to any premieres, but for anything. You probably do and maybe can give it some context. But from my perspective, that was a true moment in my life.
No, it was a hugely compelling moment because, as you noted before, there had been a kind of de facto chilling of any discussion of things related to Scientology, particularly, in the movies, in part because of very powerful people like Tom Cruise and John Travolta, who were in the motion picture industry and become leaders. I mean, at one particular studio, but also because of the litigiousness of the past. So there was this sense like, oh my God, the secret sauce is finally going to be exposed.
Yes.
And that's why there was a jam fest in order to be able to get into that I've never seen since at Sundance. There was because there was a feeling like if you might see this and then you might never get a chance to see it again.
Right.
But happily, that was just the beginning.
Yes.
There was a brief shutdown, I think, in terms of some of the theaters in Florida that were trying to show the film. They were afraid and had to shut it down. But that screening at Sundance was really a revelation. It was like an escape valve had been opened, and now you had permission to talk. You had permission to speak about this subject in a way that you didn't have before. And the cat was out of the bag.
Yeah.
It was a big moment.
Yeah. For all of us. I mean, it really was, I think, the first time that there was a collective, like, finally, in such a big way to, and like Mike mentioned, having HBO be the one who said yes to it was also big. I mean, it just says a lot to all of us who are sitting back going, is there anyone? Is there anyone who will tell these stories? And you guys did, and you did an amazing job, and thank God that it's still there. And like you're saying, people can see it and view it. And we often say, watch Going Clear, then watch The Aftermath, then go to this blog. It's like part of the repertoire that we give people to deprogram themselves.
But it gets to the heart of something that's really important too, which is that this whole idea of secrecy is so important to a cult like Scientology, that to be able to enforce silence is such a critical part of the program.
Yeah.
And that's where, you're reminded of that great Justice Brandeis quote, sunlight is the ultimate disinfectant, that you can expose the reality. And once you've opened the light, I'm a fan of those old Hammer horror films, particularly the vampire films. It's like taking the drapes and pulling them across, and Dracula's roasted in the sunlight. But allowing, breaking the silence is really a critical part of this, because by keeping people encased in a system of jargon, secrecy, insularity, it really it solidifies that control, and that control only gets loosened when you can remove those sort of pledges of secrecy.
Yes.
I wanted to ask Alex, because you you did something unprecedented, Alex, which was after the film came out, you wrote an editorial piece that appeared in the Los Angeles Times. Mm-hmm. And I remember both you and Larry had spoken to me when we were making the film and afterwards about the horror that this organization that is shown in Going Clear has tax-exempt status. And this is something that Leah and I talk about mm-hmm. often and is something that I think is exceedingly important. And you made the point in the editorial, look, they have a right to believe anything they mm-hmm. want to believe. But after we've been through what we had to go through in making this film and hearing from the people who had participated in Scientology, it is horrifying to me that American taxpayers are subsidizing these abusive practices.
That's right.
And I want to thank you for doing that. Mm-hmm. But I also, like, that's a pretty unprecedented thing for a filmmaker
exactly.
to do such a thing. What compelled you to get yourself into the LA Times with an editorial piece?
Well, it was a human rights issue. And the idea that a church or a mm-hmm. cult can hide behind religiosity mm-hmm. To be able to excuse human rights abuses. But not only that, but to have them be subsidized by the American taxpayer just seemed like such an affront. And it relates to Scientology, but it relates more broadly to other organizations as well. It's like if you're being subsidized by the American taxpayer to commit human rights uh-huh. abuses, something is terribly wrong. So that's why, I mean, it just led to having done the film, it led to a broader social policy issue that was terribly important. And obviously mm-hmm. in the film, you know, we cover the yeah. campaign against the IRS and all right. of that. Mm-hmm. But it shows how ruthless people can force institutions to do the wrong thing mm-hmm. unless people speak up and demand that they do the right thing. Right. So that was the motivation, really.
And Mike, you're going to post that on the website?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, good. It will be on the fairgamepodcast.com website as this episode airs.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Along with all the other documents, I'll put some of the smear shit from Scientology and the ads I'm just glad in the to New hear York somebody, Times and that sort of stuff.
I'm just glad to hear, you know, Alex deals with this, you know, I mean, I go, can you believe, you know, and I love to hear somebody kind of react the way they should react, which is laughing at it, enjoying how horrible they are at filmmaking and storytelling. I mean, for me, it's still kind of shocking, Alex, to see this. You know, an organization calling itself a church, parading around as a business for profit, but it's a dangerous cult using its tax exemption to bully and silence people. And it's also what the message that it's sending to victims and future victims of Scientology is, you know, shut your mouth or this is what's going to happen to you. And not everybody knows how to deal with that. And it can put people over the edge, which is the purpose of it. Right. It's to try to drive people insane and to discourage future victims from coming forward or even filing a welfare check on a family member who's right. at gold being abused or any Scientology organization being abused or being held against their will. And unfortunately, like you said, Alex, it's a lot about, you know, the prison of belief is probably one of the best phrases
descriptive,
yes, exactly, yeah. Of what how the, it explains Scientology, because I've often talked to Mike ad nauseum where he's like, stop pitching me these stupid ideas about how we've thought about it, they won't work. You know, I'm like, okay, we're gonna drop a drone, we're gonna get a drone, pamphlets into the gold base, anybody wants to leave, just jump over the gate, we're here right now, right? Go with a megaphone. With this, let's get a police officer to go in there and go, hey, anybody want to leave? Yeah. And Mike's like, none of this will work. None of this will work. This is what they'll do to stop all of this. We've thought of all of it, right? And Mike said, which was heartbreaking to me, even if you got onto a base, even if you had an audience with a mother or a father or a child, they won't walk out the gate. They will stand there believing that we are the enemies. That's what they've been taught. That's what we've been taught. And that's so unfortunate. There's no access to information like the gold base that you covered in Going Clear. But they do have access to information as a parishioner, like I did, but refused to look because right. I was taught not to look. And why would you want to look at anything disparaging against your church who's doing these amazing things for the world?
Yes, I remember John Travolta came out against the film. He was horrified by it. Yeah. He said, this is a terrible, terrible film. And somebody said, well, have you watched it? He said, oh, no, I would never watch it.
Which is true. You know, why would I watch something against my church? And if you ask any celebrity Scientologist or any Scientologist for that matter, well, what particularly did you find offensive or wrong? Or they couldn't answer you because they didn't watch it.
Yeah, no, that's the pernicious thing about the prison of belief is that the cell door is open.
Sure.
Yes.
And what it takes is an act of will to just walk through it.
Exactly.
And many people willingly stay inside the cell.
Yes.
But, you know, the more noise that's outside and the more that's available to them, I think the more they'll take that opportunity.
Well, thank you for making noise, Alex, and for if I can call you, Alex, I don't know if I'm supposed to call you Mr. Gibney. Where are we at?
Alex.
Okay. Alex. thank you, Alex, for
just call me SP for
sure. Yes, SP number one. Thank you so much for continuing to shine the light and expose Scientology and clearing the way for us to tell many stories after you, and for continuing to be in it, because like Mike said, you don't have to. You could just, you know, I did my thing. I'm on to other amazing documentaries and exposing other important stories of the world. And you continue to stay in the fight with us. And we appreciate you, Alex Gibney. And until next time, Mike, did you want to say thank you?
I just wanted to thank Alex. And it's wonderful to see you again.
Yes.
Keep up the great work, whatever you're doing.
And
whatever
thank you for doing this with us today.
We'll
love
it.
Yes, we'll love it as always.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, yes. Leah. And right thank back you, at you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Alex. And thank you to all of you for listening and supporting this podcast. And you'll hear us next week. Thank you. Have a good day.